Welcome to It's Your Turn. I'm Brenda Florida, certified life coach, and no matter how exhausted, stressed, anxious, or overwhelmed you are, there is hope. You can start exactly where you are. There's nothing wrong with you. In fact, you're ready for it to be your turn, or you wouldn't be here. You know, we hear words like vitality and confidence and empowerment and transformation, but what do they really mean? What do they look like in the practical aspects of our life? In the It's Your Turn podcast, we explore, learn, and put into practice practical tools and wise concepts for transformation. This is real life change, not platitudes. It's the intersection of the practical and the aspirational. It's your turn to make decisions that are aligned with exactly what you want. And if you've lost connection to what you want, that's okay, we'll reconnect it. You'll learn how to shift out of self-sabotaging patterns and tap in to the clarity, confidence, and vitality that you may feel like has been lost forever. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat of your life and embrace the power that is within you. So let's get to it. Hey everybody, it's Brenda here. I wanted to talk today about getting stuck in survival mode. It can happen to any of us. It doesn't matter where you are in the journey. I mean, I think sometimes people think about it as if, oh, survival mode is something I get out of and then I'm in the journey and it doesn't happen to me again. But that is not the case, at least not for this life coach. I have realized in the last, you know, weeks that I got caught in some survival mode patterns again. And so I wanted to talk about this a little bit because it's really powerful. One thing that I really want you to take away from this is that there's nothing wrong with you that you get in survival mode, okay? Survival mode is sort of kicked off instinctively, or you could say intuitively, by our reptilian mind. So we have this part of our brain that's kind of this reptilian, you know, if you've heard that expression before, that is the most primitive part of our brain and how the brain has evolved over, you know, the millions, and the difference between our brain and animal brains, which are have a lot of similarities, but we have that beautiful big neocortex, right? That is where all of our rational thinking, logical thinking is, and then the limbic brain where our emotions are, whereas animals tend to have more of this reptilian brain. But that is what allows an animal and ourselves to have just an instinctive reaction when are being threatened, when there's a danger. So if you think about an animal in the wild, let's say we're, you know, a gazelle, and they hear a rustling in the bushes, they don't have to stop and look around and think, I wonder if there's a lion over there. Let me go find out. You know, like that's not what's happening. It's not a rational thought thing. All of a sudden, their body, their physiology changes, and they intuitively know, instinctively know that they just need to get the fuck out of there, right? So they run. Usually that's what it is. You know, it's fight or flight or the two of the big reactions. But the other one that people don't talk about a lot that is also an instinctive response to imminent danger is freezing, okay? Immobility. And animals will do that because if they play dead, it's possible that the lion won't come and eat them, because the lion instinctively knows that if their prey is already dead, the meat could be going bad, right? It might not be healthy to eat. So if a lion thinks that gazelle or antelope, whatever I was a moment ago, is already dead, it might just walk away and leave it alone, go hunt something living. It is also true, though, if the lion does come and attack and, you know, hurt the gazelle, I didn't want to be too graphic there. That was my hesitation. I thought of other graphic words. The gazelle doesn't feel it as much, actually. That freezing instinct also lowers their sensitivity to pain. So it's like, okay, if I freeze, not that they're thinking this logically, I'm just saying it this way. If I freeze, maybe I won't die at all. It's going to save my life. And if it can't do that, it's going to make what's going to happen easier to take and less painful. So that's a really great quality to have, right? So we don't want to get rid of that reptilian brain. We don't want to get rid of these survival responses. It's the same way everybody's probably had this happen, if nothing else, driving, where you've had a car, swerve and almost hit you or come at you in some unexpected way. And or some other, object, and you swerve or you slam on your brakes or whatever to avoid the accident. You didn't stop and think about that and decide exactly what you would do, right? Like that instinct to react happens at a subconscious level. And so that's a really beautiful thing. So there's nothing wrong with that survival instinct. And so, in that way, we could say survival mode. What happens that becomes damaging to us, painful to us, even physically harmful to us, is the getting stuck there. So, back to our gazelle. Once it freezes and the lion goes away, let's take that outcome instead of the lion actually killing it. So, that makes for a short story. But if it survives that, it gets up, it sh literally shakes its body, sometimes in really big ways, sometimes it's more subtle, almost like a fast vibration or something, but they get their body in motion, right? Because what they just did was create total immobility. And so they've got to now literally like shake that off. And that's where that expression comes from. Cause that's, and you've seen animals do it. You've seen, whatever, a cat or dog that almost gets hit by a car and they, run over into a bush or, to the sidewalk or whatever. And then they'll shake it off, right? They'll just shake through their whole bodies. That's why, because they're releasing, even though the freeze response looks and is immobile energetically, physiologically inside that animal. It's like taking a Ferrari and putting the pedal to the metal and also putting on the brake. So energetically, it's this enormous charge of energy, even though the physical response is immobility. And so it's got to get rid of that energy. And so animals know also very instinctively, intuitively, to do that. Now, here's what happens for, and then it's going to be fine. Like in usually less than 30 minutes, 15 to 30 minutes, an animal, no matter what the crisis is, will, once that crisis is over and they've fought or they've flown, fled, or froze, they will shake it off. They'll shake their bodies, release all that energy because all those responses take a lot of energy. And then they'll just return to normal. It's back to eating the grass or, whatever. And they don't carry over that story, that response. Part of that's because they don't have that neocortex we do. So it's a little easier for them. But it's a great way to look at it. And any of you who have pets see this all the time in much smaller ways that are not nearly as dramatic as what I'm describing. A dog, a cat gets upset, or they've done something wrong, and maybe you scold them, and that you can see it in their little faces. They know they're in trouble, and then 5 minutes later, it's over. They're moving on to the next thing they wanted to do or whatever. Little children are also often, not always, depending on the environment they've grown up in, but often as little kids, we know how to do this, until we're in put in situations where we can't complete the cycle. So the completed cycle is there's something fearful in the environment. I intuitively respond, react to that, whether it's fight, flight, or freeze. Then the threat is over. I shake that off, and I return to whatever activity I was doing before. No harm, no foul. The cortisol and all that adrenaline and all the things that shoot through my body internally, hormonally, during that crisis, they go back to normal levels. You know, they'll reset themselves. My the physiology of my body will go back to normal because I completed the cycle by shaking it off and letting that energy release. Now, what happens to us as humans is we get interrupted in there. The neocort, we're great on the having the threat response, right? And we because when a threat, especially if it comes kind of surprisingly, we're not even thinking about it, we're not anticipating it. And we can do our fight, flight, or freeze thing, but then instead of being able to just complete the cycle by shaking it off and going back to normal, the neocortex pops in and it's like, whoa, wait. And it starts a whole story. This kind of thing always happens to you. You must have screwed up or this wouldn't have happened to you. If you were fighting, why didn't you flee or freeze? You know, like it'll even criticize our own survival response. We'll tell the story to a bunch of people and keep the drama and trauma alive in us. Like all these things that this big thinking and then the limbic part of our brain that feels all the feelings and they just get stuck there and we keep cycling through those feelings and the story of it. And we don't ever complete the cycle of shaking it off and returning to normal. And so one crisis just sort of adds to another crisis, trauma, you know, any of it. And we get stuck in all that survival energy, the energy that's created. Remember that Ferrari with its pedal to the metal plus the brake on? All that energy stays locked inside our bodies. The thoughts and feelings get locked into our minds, our brains, our bodies, and keep repeating themselves. And so we never get to complete the cycle and get to the back to normal, the shake it off and be back to normal. And that does all sorts of long-term damage to our bodies, our hearts, our minds, our souls. So now we're not destined to always have that be the case, right? Like we can learn, like we do in so many other arenas. I learned that eating a whole cake every day is not going to be good for the health of my body. And so I start changing my habits and eating a little differently, right? So there's always things that we can do to learn skills and tools so that we can stop the damaging aspects of that survival response. So again, it's not the fact that you were in the crisis that is really the problem. It's not the initial instinct of the survival act of fight, flee, or freeze. It's that we don't complete the cycle. And frankly, I realized, you know, just in this week, how I have some of the hangover results of not completing the cycle for myself in the trauma of being homeless. And as I was kind of working through that, so there's a lot of things about those experiences that year, the year, it was 2.5 years or so, that I've worked through. And, you know, that was it was also a very big time of growth for me because going into a crisis so deep into my journey, I had been doing so much, you know, work with myself. I had been through coach training, so I had a lot more skills of my own I could use. I learned so much about emotional well-being, you know, as I was getting trained to be a coach. You know, so when my homelessness period happened, which was like in early 2020, well, very, very late 2018. Mostly, I think of it as January 2019. I was, you know, well into my journey. And so I had a lot of skills. So that was great. So even in the midst of it, it was very much an active growing sort of my own little hero's journey, right? And that's how I thought about it even at the time. So there were many, many ways that I processed it mentally with that neocortex, even the limbic part of my brain with all the emotions and stuff. But I didn't really, it to me, it was definitely a trauma. And we don't need to, nobody needs to argue whether your trauma was really a trauma or was it a capital T trauma or a small t trauma. None of that matters. If to you it was traumatic, one definition I read recently of trauma was just that it was an unusually upsetting event for you. So it doesn't have to, it doesn't matter if somebody you tell the story to doesn't think it was a big deal. You know, if for you it was unusually upsetting, that's all that it takes. Okay. And we also, so for, I kind of framed that as if others are minimizing your traumas, but more often than that, even we minimize our own trauma. And like, was there's always somebody who's worse off. So my thing wasn't really that bad. And like for me, I was homeless in that I gave up my apartment. I didn't want to, you know, I did it because I couldn't afford to ha to pay for a home. I was doing all I could do to pay the very few like credit card bill, you know, things that car insurance, that kind of thing that you just have whether you have a home or not. So it was not by choice that I didn't have a home. But I also didn't live in a shelter or sleep in my car and some of the other, you know, sleep on the street, live on the street. There are more dramatic examples that seem very even more painful to me than the experience I went through. But it's important that I don't minimize that. And it's important that you don't minimize whatever your story is just because somebody else's was worse. But it's not exactly the trauma that's the problem. It's that, and this is what I realized because I was kind of like, wait, I've dealt with this, blah, blah, blah. I learned so much through it. I'm very grateful for it in many respects, blah, blah, blah. And then I was reminded of this cycle. And the book that I'm taking a lot of this from that I've said today that I learned it from is called Waking the Tiger. I'll try to remember to put that in the show notes with a link to it by Peter Levine. And he's written a number of trauma books, but this particular one, Waking the Tiger, is very focused on this freezing, the survival response of freezing and immobility. So anyway, back to the story. So we don't have to be, we can complete the cycle. And it doesn't matter how long ago the trauma was. Like my trauma was only a few years ago, that particular one, but I've had a number of them in my life. And it doesn't matter if your trauma, you know, if you're hearing this and you're realizing like the dots are kind of connecting or it's resonating for you, and you're like, oh, I wonder if even this thing that happened to me when I was a little kid, maybe that's trauma cycle, that or response survival mode response cycle didn't get a chance to complete back when I was, you know, five and this thing happened to me. And that's why I still carry certain ongoing, you know, lingering effects of it. It is not, it doesn't matter how long ago the trauma was. You don't have to go relive the trauma. It's working out, and it's not like there's one way to do it. So that's why I'm saying working out. It's like working out, closing off this cycle so that you can do the equivalent of shake it off and return to normal. So I've had a number of events in my life that were traumatic for me. I was sexually abused when I was really little. I was emotionally, I'll call it, abused by the religious teachings I was raised with, by some family members, by three romantic relationships, you know, and so all those things, those experiences create trauma. Now, this happens when I have this happen often when I coach someone who's in an emotionally abusive relationship, one of the most common phrases is they'll say, but there's so many ways he's good to me. And, you know, it's not like he's physically abusive, or it's not like he hits me. And I say he there just because, statistically speaking, and my experiences have, you know, sort of affirmed this, it is usually a woman who's in a emotionally abusive relationship with a man, but not true, you know, all the time, of course. I have a couple people very, very close to me who are men who were in emotionally abusive relationships with women. So, gender aside, it is that way of dismissing, of using that neocortex to talk ourselves out of it. Well, it's not that bad. And he has these good qualities, or she has these good qualities. And, you know, I'm not perfect either. So now the neocortex is coming in, and is actually kind of like interrupting, sort of effing with what could be a very natural cycle of, oh, something emotionally abusive was just said to me. I'm not going to take that. I'm going to fight or fly here, because I don't really need to freeze, or I'll freeze in the moment and then leave. Like, actually the last abusive relationship I left was, in a way, a freeze, but I was very conscious, like, he just made this ridiculously abusive demand of me. And so in that moment, even though there were times through the 3 years we were together, I questioned, or I had those red flags that this is really emotionally, verbally abusive behavior. But then, so I had that instinct, right? Like, lion is coming, a lion is coming. But I talked myself out of it, like the gazelle who's like, oh, I'm just overreacting. It was a little, just, you know, it must have been the wind in the brush or whatever, you know, and talks themselves out of that instinct to flee. A gazelle's not going to fight, or freeze, right? It talks, our neocortex talks us out of it. And so then we don't do that. So I get attacked, so to speak. He makes this, you know, really abusive ultimatum. And in my body, in many ways, I felt that familiar, because freezing is just my instinctive response to trauma. I did the same thing for the sexual abuse and plenty of other times. So that's just kind of whatever, for whatever reasons, that's kind of my go-to. I'm definitely not a fighter. I fly, I flee, or I freeze. And there's a way that, like, my body was very frozen. We were sitting at our breakfast room table and he was, you know, lecturing me. And, but my mind was fleeing in a really healthy way. Okay. So I'm thinking, okay, this relationship is over. I'm leaving, but I'm being self-protective. I'm like, okay, I didn't have a job. I was in my coach training. And I had quit my job, a very good job. Because he had agreed to support me financially while I was in training and setting up my practice, which sounded wonderful to me. So I did that. And so when this occurred, I didn't have a job. I also did not have kids at home or any of that. My kids were all adults. This was only like 10 years ago. And so I had a lot of freedoms in my life, but I didn't have money. Right. So I had like physical freedom. I didn't have to stay living in the town I was in. I didn't, we were not married. So we had never combined, you know, resource like finances and stuff like that. So, like, logistically, it was an easy relationship to get out of. But I was super concerned about the money. I had a little bit of savings, but not a lot. And so I was just kind of playing through what I needed to do to protect myself and stay safe from him, while I navigated myself out. So I did that. I was stayed very silent and just sort of agreed or complied. Not, I didn't comply to his abuse, but just like, oh, okay, I hear what you're telling me, kind of a thing. And, you know, it was an ultimatum in his case, was the way he presented it to me. So it was like, you either do this or move out. And so I was just kind of, okay, well, thank you for being really clear about that. And I'll, you know, think about it, and we'll talk again in a day or two. I slept in my office. I had a bed in my office, which was lovely. And so I slept there for the next day or two, got my, logistical act together, talked to my kids, figured out who I was going to go stay with initially, blah, blah. Got my ducks in a row so then I could tell him and then leave very quickly because I didn't really feel safe in the house. And so all of that happened, but I got the chance, my kids were super supportive, my friends were super supportive. I'm talking, I'm telling my story, I'm crying, I'm angry, I'm getting all my feelings out, not with him, because that wouldn't have served me. But with others, so I got to complete that cycle. While that, all that, those experiences with the way that relationship ended were traumatic by many standards. Okay. I mean, they just were. We don't have to say by many standards. What made the experience of it very different for me, and I understand this better looking back on it than maybe I even did at the time, but I got to complete that physiological trauma cycle. I did my freeze and then flee, and then I got to shake it off and let all that energy dispel from my body, and I got to go back to normal, a new normal, mind you, but normal, inside my own skin kind of a thing. And so that's what, it's not the event itself. Is what, people who study this, psychologists and psychiatrists and stuff who study this kind of thing, it's not the event itself that creates the long-lasting effect. It is the whether or not we can move through that cycle of processing the trauma physiologically and emotionally. And so what I realized is with this homeless piece, or there's a part of it that I haven't processed. That is for me physiological. That's how that's resonating with me now. Okay. So in another 6 months, we might have a podcast that says something different, but for now, that's how it feels. And so I'm really thinking about, okay, so how do I do that? I need to start moving my body intentionally to release that. I'm doing a lot of journaling about it. But again, for the freeze response, a lot of times there is a certain amount of physical, I mean that very specifically, physical movement to release that energy. And so, what I want you to know is that there are multiple ways to do it, to release that energy. Intentional movement is one of them, journaling is one of them, mostly, or may, to start with. You've got to have somebody that you can absolutely trust to talk to about it. And this is something that brings people into coaching because so many people in our lives have their own agenda for us, or they have their own fears, or they're triggered by something going on in us because it happened with them or something too similar, whatever. And so they can't always really be present and, not have their own filters affect how they respond to us. As a coach, that's what makes coaching, good therapy so powerful, is that the person you're talking to is totally trustworthy. They don't have their own agenda. Their own agenda is your healing, right? And so and they can help you. So you're not trying to process all that alone, because it can be very frightening to go back even to the feelings of it. Like, I'm not even talking about like really reliving it, but just like getting to the place where you can release that energy, where you can complete that cycle, is not for the faint of heart. So for me, with this homeless part, I have a lot of skills in this arena because I've had them before I ever went to coach training because of recovering from the other traumas. And then coach training helped even more, and I've got people I can go to that don't have, that are these trustworthy, no agenda people to help me kind of finish the parts that are hard for even me to sort out for myself. So we all need somebody in our lives that is like that. And or it, at a minimum, a good book. You know, sometimes a book can kind of be your person in a way. And but you've still got to do the work. You can't think your way out of this. It's that's why journaling is so powerful, because I could sit around and think all day, the trauma's over, the trauma's over, let the cycle complete itself, energy release. But my brain can't just make all that happen. Okay. So I've got to do things. I've got to get in action to change that cycle, right? Like think of that shaking off. That's an action. So even if the action is journaling, which is not exactly physically, you know, taxing, but even if that's journaling, it's getting it out. It's getting it out of my brain and onto paper. Okay. Moving my body, talking to somebody about it, like gets it out of cycling around in my own head. So I want you to know that there's always, I don't care how stuck you feel. I don't care if every day you just wake up with so much anxiety or so much stress, or you're so distracted by anticipating outcomes that are disastrous. You know, like the effects of not completing the cycle come out in all kinds of ways, and they're different for each of us or have their own nuances, you know. Some collective common ones are anxiety and lots of thinking into the future and trying to anticipate bad outcomes so you can kind of head them off at the pass, kind of a thing, waiting for the other shoe to drop, things like that, you know, are kind of collective responses, although we each sort of do them in our own way. So you don't have that, you're not destined to that life. Okay. It doesn't matter what happened, when it happened. You can be in charge of your own healing and your own way of completing this cycle energetically with the trauma, with, you know, and it's the same, even if we want to take it down from trauma, even something like almost being in a car accident or something like that, seeing something really upsetting that you would never think of as a trauma. It doesn't matter. There's still a mini version of that cycle that needs to happen. And what we don't need, what doesn't help, is how our mind will want to then grab onto that story and retell it and relive it and keep hashing through it and thinking through every single detail and da 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 da. That just keeps it all sustained. And then it takes more energy to complete the cycle, because more energy, you know, if you just think of it like it's a bucket, whatever, filling up the initial, you almost got in a car accident this morning, might have put a little sand in the bottom of the bucket that does need clearing out, or, you know, you walk barefoot on the sand for very long and it'll hurt your feet if you're on a hard surface, you know. So I'm not saying that's not painful and doesn't need to be addressed. It does. But if we keep rethinking it, replaying it, re-experiencing, re-feeling the emotions, then getting hyper-vigilant about whatever, not getting in a car again or driving in a super hyper-vigilant way or whatever. It's just like putting more sand and more sand and more sand, which is just more energy that keeps you more stuck. And it takes, so then it's going to take more to get out of it, to complete that cycle, a little more shaking off before you'll be able to return to normal. But you can do it. I've done it. I'm here to help you if you want me to help you do that. And, you know, I'm a coach. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a trauma specialist. So I don't want to at all convey that. I've just had a lot of experience with it and have, you know, definitely been taught tools to deal with it and know my own experience in it and how I've managed to successfully release myself from those trauma responses, and am working on it right now, because life can be great and you can be stuck in one of these survival mode, you know, tactics at the same time. So you, it's also not about, I'm just miserable, I'm depressed, you know, it's not, doesn't have to be that. I am grateful and have a million fabulous things in my life, and I need to take care of this now that I realize it's there. So that's what I'm doing, and I'm so glad you joined me. Please let me know in the comments if this was challenging to hear about, if it makes you curious, if you want to explore working with me, of course, there's always links to get to me in the show notes. On Instagram, I'm Brenda Florida Coach. DMing me on there is super easy. You can DM me because you probably want it to be private, or go to the show notes and you'll see the link to my email. I would love to hear from you. Obviously, comments wherever you're getting this, but this may be a topic you don't want to put a public comment about, and I get that. You do not need to stay in survival mode. And I am here and have experienced that and would love to help you complete that cycle for yourself. I'll see you in the next episode of It's Your Turn. Thank you for joining me for this episode of It's Your Turn. I've got resources and links in the show notes for you. But here's what's more fun. DM me on Instagram at Brenda Florida Coach and let me know you listened to today's episode. I'd love to connect with you. And then share this episode with somebody who needs to hear it, because I know you know somebody who needs to hear it. And I'll see you in the next episode of It's Your Turn.